Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney. You're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Hi, welcome to this week's FX Podcast. I'm a bit under the weather, John Montgomery. I'm battling a cold for last week, and it's killing me. So I'll keep this intro kind of short. Those of you who weren't on stranded on a desert island last week obviously know that it was announced last week that Autodesk purchased Softimage from Avid. And I think actually we've had a pretty decent level discussion in FX Guide. Some of these things can actually lead to a lot of kind of over-the-top discussions in the forums and so forth. But I'm going to say it's been fairly restrained. And I think you can look at this from a couple camps. Of course, one, Autodesk being the Borg, swallowing up these smaller software companies like RealViz and, you know, Denim and, you know, Combustion back in the past, now Softimage. And, you know, actually removing competition from the field by buying everyone out. Now, I personally think competition is good, and a variety of manufacturers and a variety of products is great. I think it challenges the various manufacturers to make their products better. But at the same time, I can also see the other side, which is kind of an experience as a flame artist back in the day when Discrete was going through some serious financial trouble. And I actually don't think that Flame would be around today, at least in its current form, had Autodesk not purchased it and actually had a strong financial backing to kind of continue development there in Montreal for Discrete and so forth. So I think something can be said really positive about that, especially if you take a look at the financial results of Avid, and they're hemorrhaging cash right now. And that can't be a good thing for software development. You know, it really needs a lot of cash. You need to hire developers to really put into the development to make the software better. And that's something that hopefully Autodesk will follow through on, a little bit of cash infusion, keeping a very strong product, and hope that doesn't become a product like, say, Cleaner, Combustion, that have really lagged behind, and I think were kind of discarded by Autodesk in the past. Some really, you know, potentially great products, especially Combustion, they were kind of hung out to dry, and hopefully that won't happen in these current days. You know, that's been a while ago at Autodesk, and hopefully that won't happen now with the development of Softimage, and will actually help development of the product. Because I think the recent release of XSI is really strong, and that's our focus this week. Our conversation is with Bill Roberts of Softimage. Now, I want to point out that this interview was recorded just shortly before the takeover, so that's why it's not addressed within the conversation that Mike had with Bill Roberts. But I think the conversation is really great in seeing where Softimage is and some of the new features. What is ICE actually, and why is it so great, as well as some of the strengths of the product. So why don't we go ahead and join that conversation now. Mike Seymour speaking with Bill Roberts.
Thanks so much. And Bill, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, it's good to be here, Mike.
Now, you're a longtime friend of FX Guide, though we used to know you at previous companies. How long have you been at Softimage?
It'll be 2 years in February, so just a little under 2 years.
Now, Softimage as a company, we're going to get into some of the new things that you guys have released, in particular ICE and a few other things. But, of course, Soft as a company has a long tradition, dating back to, what, 86, kind of, I think, when it was first started?
Yeah, 1986, that's correct.
Before we get into specifics of the product, let's discuss Soft's sort of position. You're obviously involved in the Academy Award-winning stuff on Happy Feet, and there are other films, tons of other films that you've been involved in. And yet, as we sit here today talking, it's not the case that RenderMan is directly supported with XSI. And as recently as the 15th of September, Chris Ford, who's the business director of RenderMan, put a question on your own forums asking whether or not that would be something that would be of interest to the XSI community. Is the lack of connection with RenderMan affecting you at the high end in the major feature film market?
Oh, I think so. I think that that's we'd love to have that there. And we've been engaging with Pixar for quite some time, actually dating back, you know, prior to the Disney acquisition of Pixar. And unfortunately, that seemed to have changed the development priorities for, you know, Dana and his team inside of Pixar. So we were pretty much set to go back at that point, but everything kind of got reevaluated with much more of a focus on production software. So, you know, we're delighted to see that, you know, Chris is, you know, poking around again, trying to find out if there's support. So we've had tremendous success with people adopting XSI. And, you know, previous to version 6, when we opened up the render API, you were limited. You really had Mental Ray, which is a brilliant renderer, but it may not suit your production needs. So by opening up the Render API, that allowed other people to start adopting it. You know, people like V-Ray, one of the best and deepest integrations to date has to be 3Delight, which is really interesting because it does span that world between RenderMan and MentalRay. It is a RenderMan compliant renderer. You can, you know, generate ribs, but it also is per pixel accurate on the render output. So if you want to use it to render specific passes for compositing later, you can combine it with MentalRay. So that's our, you know, our current position. You know, it hasn't seemed to, you know, it's, I'm guessing it's more of a starting blocks issue, the RenderMan support, because we really don't see it emerging during the sales process. And we do see a number of features using XSI, most of which, at being in production, we can't speak about, but we did see a definite upturn this summer, particularly in Europe, even more particularly in France.
Because there are a lot of packages that are specialist boxes, I mean, take Massive or whatever, that that tend to have adopted Rib and RenderMan as a kind of default path. So I guess it is of interest both for the specific and also for the broader issue, because XSI isn't coming to the market with a dominant position dictated. It actually has to be a bit of a good sort of play with others kind of piece of software, doesn't it? Because you must be seeing integration with XSI with a range of other tools.
Oh, for sure. And that's, you know, if I put that into a bigger context, there's a historical point of view to that too. If you go back to the sort of the last big shift in 3D, which is when, you know, people transitioned from Gen 1 commercial packages like Soft3D and Power Animator into the current generation of XSI and Maya. What happened there is Maya got on the market much earlier than we did with an open API and established really a share advantage, which, you know, is there today. So you're absolutely right that we're coming at this as the challenger brand. And you're spot on when you say that carries, you know, a burden of interoperability. So we've definitely tried to embrace that and turn it from being something that we have to do to something which is a point of excellence. So with XSI, we introduced a feature called Crosswalk. Now, Crosswalk is a plugin that installs on either a Max or a Maya system and allows us a very, very rich exchange of scene data. Now, normally you can go through these sort of processes using something like Collada or FBX. The unique advantage of, you know, using Crosswalk is that when you bring the data back, instead of sort of thinking of it about as a linear path where it goes to one and returns as something else, you can actually marry the data back into the original scene, which can be really crucial if you're, you know, trying to make sure that all of your data is very cleanly structured. And that's a huge feature for anybody who's got a more advanced pipeline where they've built their own backbone. They don't want extraneous data. They want everything to be very clean. So we've done that. We've been very, very active in the Collada community. You know, we sit on every face-to-face. We try to drive that standard. And we think as a transport mechanism, it's going to be the direction we see more and more companies going. We've seen a lot of energy behind that. So we try to make sure that we play well with others. That's the long story short.
So now, well, let's talk about specific things, version 7 and also the implementation of ICE, the Interactive Creative Environment. So what we've seen, well, maybe you could summarize for those that don't know what ICE actually means to an artist using XSI.
Sure. So I think, you know, just zooming back slightly from that, if you sort of look at any job, whether it's a 30-second commercial or a two-hour VFX film, I don't think anybody today goes at those challenges saying, I'll just pick up this 3D application and it's got everything I need to do 100% nailed down. Everybody's all about extending the applications. But if you look at them, the current generation prior to us releasing XSI 7, there were very different ways that a customer extended the software from the company itself. The company provided its tools as DLLs. The customers were expected to either write something for scratch using a C++ API or use scripting to try and change what the software could do. And that's just the reality today. in an environment where anybody who consumes entertainment is bombarded by a whole range of content, you know, and it's all, you know, anybody at home now can get access to top tier Hollywood content 24/7. So everybody's trying to do better, trying to do more. That was the underlying reason that we took on ICE. So what ICE does is, instead of us providing DLLs, what we've done is we've changed the approach. We've taken the concept of API, pushed it much lower in the application, and changed the interface to it from a, you know, text-based C++, which is a very abstract language, to a graph. Now, that allows you a couple of advantages. One, it's very logical to program. Two, all the tools that we provide are open graphs now. So if you like 90% of what something that Softimage has provided, it's very, very easy just to jump in and change that. And the last part about it is, not only did we change the interface, we changed the execution. So any ICE graph is automatically optimized for multicore. So this is something that's very new. If I put it into an effects guide, you know, terms, you know, people on Flame think about that as interactive effects versus, you know, some of the straight up software packages which aren't as interactive. Now, if you take it, you know, with ICE, it's like interactive 3D. So if you're doing particles and deformations today, IK, everything in the future, it's all interactive and virtually real time, as long as your graph isn't too huge or too bound by graphics or something non-compute. So that's sort of the big push. You've got this interactive world. So back to your core question, what does it mean to an artist? Well, one of the big things for an artist is he doesn't need to rely on the TD as much. When we look at how it's been adopted at places like The Mill, they were saying one of the great things is the TD can provide a programming framework. So, and he can explain to the artist, okay, this chunk does this, this chunk does this, this chunk does this. You can construct the right UI, so the artist can actually be much more self-sufficient. And I think that's really what we're trying to do with this, is bridge that gap between artist and TD, because up till today, they really spoke in different languages, one in text-based abstract languages, one in artistic terms. So this brings them a lot closer.
Now, if one was to look at the marketing materials on your website and just look at the sort of demos that you were doing around SIDGRAPH and stuff, there's a lot of particle stuff, a lot of simulation stuff in them. I'm going to discuss a couple of questions on that if I can. Firstly, sure. Let's establish that some of this stuff is built on stuff that you openly have hooked up with other companies with, like the cloth simulation from Cyflex, for example, right? Cut,
shape, and haircut. Sure. Yeah, we look at the state of 3D is, you know, I don't think any company can advance an entire 3D platform to excellence on their own, regardless of the size of the engineering team. So our approach to this has really been to make XSI like an aggregator of technology. When we find smart technology on the market that it operates at an industry-leading level, we'll partner with those people and integrate it. And we think that's the best service to our customers, making sure, you know, just because we didn't write it doesn't mean it's not brilliant and shouldn't be included in the package. What we can control is how well it's integrated and making sure that, exactly as you were saying, how does it interact with the rest of the application? So in our application today, our physics engine comes from NVIDIA, ultimately tracing back to the Aegea roots. Our cloth, you know, comes from Cyflex, but both of these solutions are deeply integrated into the application. So if you're using the ICE environment, they're all still available as services. You can do rigid body dynamics inside of an ICE graph. So you have the physics and the particles working hand in glove.
Yeah, and I mean, companies like Cyflex are incredibly successful for the work they've done. Now, I mean to take nothing away by saying that, but what I was heading towards is when you go and see the demos, there's quite a lot of simulation stuff that's especially around ICE, a lot of particle stuff is shown. And I'm wondering, because one of the areas, and I don't know if you'd agree with this or not, that we've seen in the last few years is a growth of Houdini coming in for the ability to do simulation work, but also because it's so programmable, so able to be built on and built up from the individual's point of view. I'm wondering whether or not this is a path that ICE opens up for XSI, the to sort of build into a pipeline through the simulation side? Is this something strategically that's of value to you? Is this just a coincidence?
I think that, you know, when I said before that, you know, the industry is moving towards wanting to do more, I think the increased focus on Houdini is an absolute sign that that's something that's happening. So, you know, Houdini is a very brilliant package. You know, the biggest complaint you ever hear about Houdini is that it's so flexible, it's very hard to learn. So in some ways, we feel we've taken a lot of the power that people would turn to Houdini for and made it available more for mere mortals. And the other big difference, you know, between what we've done with ICE and Houdini is there's very little of Houdini that's multi-threaded. So I think that that's another factor in this today, as everybody's looking at, you know, today a standard workstation that a typical VFX or 3D artist would be working on is 8 cores. I think we've all been keeping up to date on where Intel is going. And when we have 32 cores, what does that mean? I think, you know, the delta today between, you know, 1 core working efficiently and 7 resting might be tolerable. But when you've got 1 and then 31 doing nothing, it's going to be a different world. So I think that that's sort of what the approach we took is, people want that processing horsepower to be interactive and drive the experience. So if you look at that, you know, we're not, you know, I think Houdini will still have its role as the hero lead, you know, platform for people going off and doing amazing, stunning work. But there's a huge section where people don't need to go as far, but need to go there much faster.
Well, you're also supporting major games engines. So where is XSI sitting? Is it trying to be, you know, everything from architectural simulation to scientific visualization and gaming and film, or are you more narrowly focused?
We're definitely more narrowly focused. As part of Avid, you know, we're 100% focused on entertainment. We do have some customers who adopt XSI and design visualization, but their usage is, you know, based on entertainment workflows. So we really don't tailor the features to their particular needs. So in the entertainment space, you basically have, you know, kind of three distinct usage patterns. There's, you know, full CG 3D features. There's VFX work, which is, from a workflow perspective, quite similar between film and television. And then there's gaming. You know, so for us, we try to work across all three. There's a lot of things which are common, and especially we see more hybrid pipelines being experimented with, where people are producing a high fidelity asset and then reducing the quality to suit the particular needs of a game engine, and then optimizing all the shaders and what's necessary to accurately draw that object. So for us, we kind of treat it as, you know, the creation side. You want the deepest, richest set of tools. Then you want to package or condition the asset for the particular output, whether that's, you know, high-end render, or whether you have to reduce the fidelity and change the object so it goes into engine. And then what we really want to do is just sort of give options. On the gaming engine side, over the course of the past year, we've formed some, you know, we've beefed up some existing support, and we've also gone further and partnered deeply with people like Microsoft on the XNA front, trying to tap into the casual gaming space, which is growing quite quickly with Xbox Arcade. And on a higher level, people like Crytek. So, you know, Crytek's got a beautiful engine that produces wonderful results, and we've built out a good relationship with them. So on the gaming side...
You're talking about the CryEngine 2?
So CryEngine 2. Yeah, so I think it's... I think everybody, you know... Yes, people are still running around killing each other, but they're doing it in beautiful, lush vegetation with, you know, amazing water. And so.
And yet, if we go back to your original roots, as it were... You know, Softimage really did a lot of work in sort of pioneering nonlinear animation. What is it you want to be known for if you had to be known for something in the entertainment space?
Well, I think you're right. Characters have always been at the core. And if you look at the bulk of our patents, most of the things are in that space, from everything from, you know, the Quaternion spine. And, you know, we're working on a range of different things right now. You know, we acquired the CAT technologies and continue to sell the CAT plugin for 3ds Max, but that was really to start bringing more knowledge in. So characters are a huge part of any project. So we do want to keep that as close to our heart as possible. But I think that if you look at the 3D use patterns today, if you're too specialized, you become too niche. So we want to provide a platform on which people can, you know, extend the creative tools. They can connect the data structures into their facility. And on top of that, we'll deliver points of excellence. You look at things like, you know, Face Robot, that's a point of excellence for facial animation. As we move forward, we feel that Particle and Effects with this version of ICE is a point of excellence, and we'll continue adding these on top. So, you know, it's ultimately, like I said at the beginning, there's no 3D package that anybody can turn to and say, every single thing I need is in this box. We live in a world where people's imagination drives the process.
Yeah, and I'm going to call you on that, Bill, because I'm not going to get into people's force of imagination stuff because I know you too well. I'm going to pull you back down because you're a good friend, and you're going to forgive me. But hey, look, in the area of the simulation stuff, you've got the particles and stuff. You don't have a full fluid sim in there, though you've mentioned these other companies. Is there any chance that you will extend ICE to do a kind of real flow type thing, or would you be interested in partnering up on that, or is that something that will come naturally as people develop more into the ICE environment?
Well, I think it's a really interesting area because that's hugely, you know, computationally intensive. And if you think about, you know, some of the best fluid sims today, you think, you know, massive render farms and a very non-interactive process. If you hit the Soft website on the news section, you'll see we've entered into a research agreement with a company that's another Canadian company based in Ottawa called Exocortex Technologies. You probably don't know that name, but you might know the name of the person who founded the company, Ben Houston. So Ben came out of Franek in Winnipeg, mm-hmm. where he was one of the primary people responsible for Flood. He owns a number of patents in the domain of fluid simulation, and he's delivered a number of papers on the topic as well. So he's a really brilliant guy, but that's what he's done in the past. We're interested in what he's doing in the future. So Ben is someone who really shared our philosophy about, you know, trying to optimize the multi-core experience, and he definitely saw a world where fluids and gases could be much faster. So, and he also saw a world where they could be much higher quality. So, you know, one of the big things with fluids and gases, it's the subtleties. It's the little things that you can't pick up while watching in real time. But if you go back and jog through frame by frame, you see the little eddies and swirls in the correct places that makes it look right. So his solution, his core technologies that he's looking at, whether it's feasible to bring into our world, is based around a tetrahedral solve. So you end up with a lot more detail around small components. So we can't promise at this point that this is something that will ultimately become a feature, but we think that it's a fantastic opportunity to work with someone we think is going to, pardon the pun, set the high watermark in this space. And hopefully, if everything goes well, you know, in the future, you'll see, you know, some of the best fluid sim ever in XSI.
That's particularly interesting. Now, let me ask you one other thing. We've seen with Mayo integration with Toxic, and just frankly with a range of products going for multi-pass rendering, feeding into compositing trees, the role of the TD in sort of pre-building composites. And you guys list that you have a compositing paint or a built-in compositor in XSI. I'm wondering how you see XSI's output, especially in the area of OpenEXR multi-pass rendering, feeding into any of the common compositing packages, the Nukes or Shakes or whatever.
Yeah. So I think there's two things. So we definitely, you know, that was one advantage of being part of Avid. You know, Avid many years ago, back in, I think it was around, I want to say 96, but don't hold me to that, somewhere around there, acquired the technologies of a company called Parallax. So Parallax was pretty brilliant. Way back in that period, they had the first 64-bit paint and compositing packages, Matador and Illusion. So Matador, which was the gold standard for many years for paint, and Illusion, which was an interactive compositor, both of them SGI-based, Also around the same time, Avid acquired morphing and warping technologies from Elastic Reality, Perry Kovalevitz and Paul Miller's company, which did some brilliant stuff. And I still know so many people who use, you know, old copies of
As you say, Elastic, it was the gold standard for Elastic Reality, yeah.
So one of the great things is when Avid retired those products and exited the SGI space, the core technologies were available. So they're all embedded in XSI. So we do have a compositor module. It's an amazing number of actual finished spots that get done on XSI. Anybody who dives in is always amazed at the power of it. So for us, we really more target it for, you know, pre-comp work. You do have all the tools to go all the way, but generally from a workflow perspective, in any sort of, you know, larger pipeline, it's generally more just, you know, double checking that your asset is, you know, lit correctly to composite into some live action. So a lot of pre-comping gets done. For us, you know, do we really see ourselves, you know, pushing the compositing component of our 3D package as a competitor to, you know, packages like, you know, Toxic and Nuke and everyone else? Not so much. We really see ourselves, you know, playing in that world, allowing the 3D artist the ability to do a pre-comp without having to have another package on the seat, which we think is huge. If you start just thinking about, you know, package in a 100-person pipeline, it can become very expensive. So we'd rather...
But the flip side of that, though, is you don't want to have a pre-comp situation that the pre-comp's done by the 3D. They're happy, and then it has to be redone and reinvented by the compositing department. And so clearly, you know, everything from roto compatibility to passing through camera data for camera mapping and stuff. I mean, there is a lot of strength, for example, in having a 3D department doing their pre-comps in Nuke if their final comps in Nuke. I'm wondering how you see that working, because clearly, you know, there is a pipeline where we want to have camera tracking information solved for a 3D solution, but also we want that taken through to 2D. And a lot of stuff, data is being passed now through as, you know, literally the 2D comp gets more intelligent.
Yeah, and I can't argue that at all, Mike. I think that if you look at, you know, every pipeline is going to be unique. And what we want to do is exactly that workflow you're talking about, make sure that people, when they're in the compositing stage, have all that data. So our compositor is not not focused on being the only tool that people use, but it's there for some pipelines who need it. And in the cases where they don't, we'll focus on building a strong open ecosystem. And we always make our data fully available. So in the cases where we can't build a vendor-to-vendor specific pipeline, all the data is there if somebody on their own pipeline wants to connect the dots.
And just in finishing, the other area that, of course, is getting a lot of attention from all the areas of post-production is 3D stereoscopic production. And in the area of 3D films, it's probably the strongest presence in terms of actual deliverables to the theaters. In other words, we're seeing more 3D animated films that are stereoscopically done than almost anywhere else. Does XSI share the belief that 3D stereoscopic is a powerful way forward?
Oh, I think so. I think that, you know, if you look at it, you know, you have to again, you know, sort of zoom back and think about the consumer experience. You know, why will 3D features make sense? Because everything else inside the home is getting to a level where I can have a 52-inch widescreen at a reasonable cost, a 5.1 surround sound or a 7.1, whatever I want. I can have great sound and vision at home. So I think there's still a human desire to go out and consume entertainment in a crowd, but you want something more. So I think the stereoscopic experience is great. As people produce more, the quality of the 3D experience becomes much more interesting.
Have you announced specific 3D stereoscopic tools?
So we've been involved in 3D pipelines already. So from our perspective, a lot of the basic pieces are there. What we're looking at now is an area where people integrate it and make it so that stereoscopic can be done more by anyone rather than, you know, TD type people. So things like, you know, Journey to the Center of the Earth, big hit this summer, done up at Ibrid, stereoscopic, all done with XSI. So we've been involved in these pipelines. And, you know, obviously, we grow the product as to what our customers want. So you'll see some of those tools start to integrate into XSI.
Well, look, we really appreciate you taking time to talk to us, and certainly we hope that we can get you back. We'd love to illuminate more some of the details of what's going on, especially, you know, the face robot stuff we haven't had time to talk about. So it would be great to get you back in the future. But thank you very much for taking time to talk to us today.
Hey, my pleasure, Mike. Great to talk to you.
Well, thanks, guys, for that. And Bill, good to hear from you. You've been a longtime friend of FX Guide, so it's good to hear about what's going on over at Softimage. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us. Well, that's it for this week. We'll wrap it up by just saying that we do have actually our first Softimage course over at fxphd.com. It's being taught by Lucas Martel. Those of you may know him from Pitch'em Impossible fame. So we've got a great class over at FX PhD. Be sure to check that out this term as well as all of our other courses. It's a great time to join. We just started our third week. Well, that's it for this week. Again, I got to stop talking here. And as always, for my partners, Mike Seymour and Jeff Huser, thanks for listening.
Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2008 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide.